Tala. Then you have Hindu Tal. They're all Talas. They're all Talas, meaning that they're all flat. They're not individual planets. They're like mandalas that are connected to Meru. Above the earth, then you have planets that are connected by wind, like that. And all this is happening within the lotus. I mean, there's within the lotus stem, which is 2 billion miles across. So everything's inside that. Then you have 1 billion on each side where nothing's happening. In other words, in the lotus, you have the up to Loka mountains. All that's happening within the lotus, and beyond that is happening outside the lotus.
Are the Loka mountains like the shell of the stem?
Not necessarily. It means all of these things are very subtle, because you also have a manifestation of Brahma's lotus on that last mandala.
Yeah. Which could be.
Yeah. You know? So there's many different ways that all this is manifested, because the point is it's very subtle. It's the Lord's potencies. The one potency is not manifest in just specifically one way, you know, like that. You know, you have sun, moon, and fire. These are the main, like, illuminating elements that create heat and all that. But they manifest in so many different ways, you know, like that. In other words, they're reflections of the spiritual potencies, and then within here, then there's reflections of them. Like that, they all have different natures. So, like that, you start to understand the manifestations and all that. And you have to understand when it says, like it says that, what is it? I forget the mountain. But that Pushkara Dweep is divided into two. Yeah. So that mountain. When it says it's 10,000 yojanas high and 10,000 wide, but it's the length of the whole mandala, so it goes all the way around. It's in a circle, because it says Indra, Varuna, you know, Yama, and Vayu, they all have their residences on that mountain. So we know that one's in the north, one's in the south, one's in the east, one's in the west. And that's the cardinal directions. That's not just on one mountain. So that mountain goes all the way around, just like the Loka, they go all the way around. Yeah. But my point is they go all the way 360 degrees around the mandala. Notice the mandala goes 360 degrees around Meru, then in the center of that mountain goes 360 degrees around. So it's 10,000 yojanas high, 10,000 wide. But also, it's as long as whatever the circumference is of the middle of the island. So it's on the inside and outside, because the sun chariot rides on that mountain.
It has one chariot, one wheel, and goes on one Asokara mountain like this. It's connected to Mount Meru with a gribble. Goes around like this. The Loka mountains are higher than they block the sunshine now, so nothing goes outside.
Yeah, that's why those very far planets are dark. Yeah. Like you see the planets up to what? Up to Saturn.
Yeah, after Neptune, Pluto,
Uranus, yeah. Like that, they're all dark. And they're so far away, so we don't. In the Indian Vedic astrology, they don't bother with them. In Western astrology, they like to deal with them.
It's a couple even more and more than Pluto.
Huh? Yeah, it means as time goes, they'll find more and more things. I mean, how much they expect to see. You know? But they're all trying to do that just to figure out who they are and where they came from and what's the purpose of life. So you can find that all out right here.
But are there living entities on this planet? This far dark planet?
Yeah, there's living. I know there's living entities everywhere. Mm-hmm. Actually, everywhere they live.
Bhagavatam says the Yama's kingdom, the Plutoniac planet, in the Pluto is Yamaloka. Mm. There are many Yamadutas living there.
Mm. No, so he has a residence here on the Bhumandala in these directions, because he's one of the controllers of the directions. But he also has his place down in, between Patal and Mahavishnu. I mean Garbhodakshaya Vishnu.
Also someone near Earth. I also remember I heard that very near Earth also he has planet.
Planet, not planet, no, maybe residence.
Residence.
Maybe. No, just like here, Kailash Shiva lives here and Kailash here. But he also lives on the Kailash that's, you know, farther up in the universe. And he lives outside the universe, in the Brahman. Like that. So it's like that, they have various manifestations for the different work. Like that.
Yeah, they're also saying like they have an office and the worship in place. Like,
It's all based, like we were saying, on the same principles. They're always based on the same principles. So then you always end up with the same, what do you call it? Things function in basically the same pattern. So if you understand the basic principles, then so many things start to make sense. You know, why things work, because they're coming from the same person. That person has unlimited manifestation, but there's certain ways he likes to do things, and based on that, then everything happens. Like the energies is basically three, Samvit, Sandini, Ladini. You understand those, then that basically you can understand how the combination, how everything manifests, and then it's reflection in the material world. You know, you have Sat, Chit, Ananda, you know, so these are those three, like that. And so then so many things manifest. So these basic principles are there and they permeate everything. So there's unlimited manifestations, you know, and variety, but they're all based on the same principles, you know. Just like the 8,400,000 species of life, then there's three modes. 3 times 3 is 9, times 9 is 81, times 81, like this, it just keeps going to 8,400,000. So all the species of life are just the manifestations of the different combinations of the modes. That's all. You just take, you know, mathematically, just so many like that. So in the same way in the Ayurveda, then these modes, they use the same principle of the modes, the mucus, bile, and air. Your air will be goodness, bile will be passion, and mucus will be ignorance. And then how those function. And so then good, general Ayurvedic doctors will take 3 times 3, you know, like that. So you get each one combined with the other. You know, you get air, bile, air, kapha, you know, like this. So you get these combinations, you get 9. But the very good ones of the old school, they used to do 81. They would see it times again, you know. Then you get your fine details, fine tuning of it. But it's still those same principles, right? Because the mucus, bile, and air is based on the, they said, the three, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and that's then reflections of Samvit, Sandini, Ladini, you know, like that. So it's all based on the same principles, you know, and earth, water, fire, air, ether, these are combinations of those. So like this, it's all connected. These things are all connected. So it's kind of like you put all the things together. You know, it's like when you teach something, you teach it separately. You know? So the whole idea is you understand what's going on in these aspects, then you can carry the same principles through whatever you're dealing with. You know, like here we're studying the deity worship. So this is the process of rules and regulations, vaidhi sadhana. But from this you can also, the same principles are there in the raganuga sadhana. Same principles in the bhav sadhana, same principles in the prema bhakti. though it manifests differently according to the nature of how it's of its medium, like that. But the same principles are coming down. That everything folds back up into always remember Krishna, never forget. You won't get something else. Like that. So you can understand from, you know, get into the principles from one, then you can start connecting and seeing the other ones. You know? But ultimately the whole idea is that you're supposed to see the Lord. Most important is you take any one of the Vedic angles of study, and then if you can, by the Lord's grace, enter that, then you can see the connection with the Lord. Then you can see the Lord, you know, through that medium. Like that, because you have Krishna, the transcendental subject, is the central subject. Then around that is all the other branches of knowledge. They all have their original connection. You know, but if you just take that aspect of the Lord, like one of his potencies is, he is the healing herb, right? So that, just that understanding, that connection, then goes right in, and then you have the whole science of Ayurveda. So since it's him, it's going to come with the way he does things. You know, so the transformation is Samvit Sandini Ladini. You know, so that's going to come in. As you know, your mucus, bile, and air. But it's coming in that. How Samvit Sandini and Hladini, how they transform in the material world and then come down into medicine, then you have the Ayurveda. Right? Krishna says he is the ritual, he is the ghee, he is the fire, he is the mantra, he is all these things. So that is now how the Lord, in that transformation, manifests through the ritual. Right? So that's all the kalpa, like that. Then how he manifests through dharma, the social ritual, right? Rather than just the, you know, the ceremonial ritual, right? So then how he manifests through Sanskrit, the grammar, the pronunciation, all these things. Through the planets. The planets also are according to the three modes. And then they affect you. So accordingly, you have nine planets that take on different qualities, and they affect you in a certain way that creates your field of activities. You know? Like that. So in other words, all of them are connected back to Krishna. Krishna is the central feature. So if you study the subject and don't see Krishna, it's no use. If you study the subject and you see Krishna through it, it's great use. Therefore, you see, you always get this combination at the party.
Yeah.
They're very, very lively. Very lively. So that's the whole thing, why you have it becomes bewildering. Because you'll have one quote that's saying, you know, this study is wonderful. Study of the rituals is great, wonderful. Like that, you can become liberated. So many different benefits like that. Other shlokas then will be saying how useless is that, you know? You know, is it? That one about the Swapacho Guru? Yeah, so you have some guy who knows all the mantra tantras and everything like that, but if he's not a devotee, what's the use? And you have somebody who's a chandala, if he's a devotee, then everything's perfect. So the whole point is perfection is when it connects to the Lord. If it's not connected to the Lord, there's no perfection. Right? It's just like, if one, you know, modern knowledge or Vedic knowledge, both are useless unless they're connected to the Lord. modern culture, Vedic culture, both are useless unless it's connected to the Lord. So connection to the Lord makes something useful. If it's not connected, it is useless. But of the two, then you'll find that you're Vedic because it's the knowledge is coming from the Lord. Just following it, then you're better situated. Doesn't necessarily mean you're more devotional, but you're better situated, that if somebody comes along and, you know, turns on the light, then it all makes sense. Well, on the Western, then it's a long way to go, because you have to totally change the way you think, totally change the way, because they're not connected in with these things of how the Lord works. Like the Lord's working through these three energies, and they're unlimited manifestations. So in the West, they don't understand these. So that means they're going to think in a totally different way. While in the Vedic culture, they'll think in that way, though they don't know that it's coming from Krishna or how to connect it to Krishna. So if you can just show them that little bit, they're so close. It's very easy. But if not, they're very far. Like that. So it's you have to catch that balance. So anything that is connected to Krishna then becomes good. So all these branches of knowledge, the most important is to get to Krishna through that branch of knowledge, whichever branch of knowledge you choose. That's why for the devotee, it doesn't matter. On the material platform, then we'll say Brahman is higher than Kshatriya is higher than Vaishya is higher than Shudra. Right? But they're all working with a branch of Vedic knowledge. You know, different branches or combinations of branches. So if they connect it to Krishna, what's the difference? If someone takes their music, their musician, they take their music, connect it to the Lord, then what's the difference between them and a Brahmin who's taken his puja and connected it to the Lord? There's no difference. Right? There's no difference. Because the purpose of the knowledge is to get to Krishna. Right? But as we said, that the lifestyle, the Vedic lifestyle is more suited, it's closer to Krishna because it's coming from Krishna directly. While the West is just the indirect, it's the back of Krishna. The other is the front of Krishna. Right? Adharma is the back of Krishna. You know? Like that. But Dharma is the front.
It's quite interesting.
Right? It means we can be personal with somebody from the front. It's very hard for if they're turned around backwards and we're talking to the back of their head to try to strike up a relationship. So therefore the front is more favorable for establishing a relationship with the Lord than if you only live with if you're everything's dependent upon the back. Because the back then you have a tendency that God doesn't relate. He has no senses. He has no, because you don't see anything. From the back, you don't see any of the senses. Right? You can't. So that's the thing. The adharma, then it becomes very difficult. Like that. So in the same way, then the lifestyle, values, and everything of the Brahman, within the Vedic culture, that lifestyle and mentality is the best, most suitable for going back to Godhead very quickly. So if one, and that is because they see some things in relationship to the Lord. Right? Just by nature, if you take it, it's a gradual development, lifetime after lifetime, that one moves through these varnas, comes to the Brahminical platform. Then so many lifetimes of that, of knowledge, you know, the activities, the karma of the Brahman, then the understanding of the Brahman, and then you actually understand how all that connects to the Lord. That's why it said someone who's become a devotee has already gone through all this. Right? Because that's the natural way the system works. But here, by the grace of the devotees and the Lord's mercy, then one can take up devotional service, even though one may not have a brahminical conditioned nature, occupational nature. That's not important. What's important is what actually makes the factual brahminical nature is taking what branch of knowledge you have and seeing it in relationship to Krishna, right? Because that's what the Brahmins are into. Everybody else is just taking their branch of knowledge and getting eating, sleeping, mating, defending out of it. You know, or some karma, gyan, yoga, something like that. That's what they want out of it. They're not looking for something else. But now the Brahman who has understood, understands that his branch of knowledge is not for that, but for pleasing the Lord. So whatever their branch of knowledge is, you see Brahmins in all these branches. They're into the philosophy, they're into the Veda, they're into the Sanskrit, they're into the Jyotish, they're into the Ayurveda, you're into all these different things, the music, this, that, you know. Like Drona, his thing was the art of fighting, you know. Like that. You don't hear him telling how to run a kingdom. He's telling what is the mentality of the Kshatriya and how they're able to fight. Like that. You don't hear of him teaching them, you know, politics. Right? Krishna and Balaram, they learned that from Sandipani Muni. They learned that in the Gurukul. It was, you know, general Gurukul. You learn all that. In the specialized, then you specifically learn martial arts or those kind of things. So you learn those. So all these different areas are there. A Brahmin may be expert even in art. But the difference is he's supposed to be seeing it in connection at least with Brahman. And ultimately then with Krishna. So if you have an artist whose thing is music and they see it in relationship to Krishna, then let me figure out what that thing is. Is that something?
Huh? You said about Brahmana, that Brahmana connecting between Brahman or Krishna.
Yeah.
Then also even ordinary art.
Yeah. So in art, you see it in relationship to Krishna. You've accomplished what the Brahman is trying to do with his branch of knowledge. So you have a branch of knowledge, you connect it to Krishna. So that means one is a Brahman. One may not be, perfected Brahman. In other words, you have an understanding, you have activities, you have understanding, and that gives you a realization. Right? So Krishna says, knowledge means these realized qualities. So that's what we're trying to get to. The problem comes is sometimes there's a gap between our beginning to realize how Krishna is the center of everything and are practically applying it. So the knowledge is theoretical. We know it is, but we don't know how to engage our particular area, or we know how to protect our area but don't understand others' areas. You know, tendencies to think our area is the best. So we try to compare material things. You know, it's just like trying to say Krishna's foot is better than his hand, or Krishna's head is better than his, you know, his stomach, his chest. Everything about Krishna is perfect, right? The devotees can describe him from the head to the foot, how beautiful he is and all the different lakshanas and all these different things. So the problem comes is that the neophyte thinks my service is more important. So unless God has said that service is more important, then that's just our own understanding, right? And even if something is more important, that's because Krishna's entered it in that particular way, right? So in this age, the preaching is the most important. So if you're doing anything with the preaching, that is important. What you're doing has some relationship to preaching, it's important. So the whole idea is that we have to be very, very careful of thinking that our particular thing is better than another. Is it better because we're doing it? Because you generally see whatever someone's doing, they think it's the best. Right? So if somebody is doing one of the things that Krishna says is the best, then naturally they'll also think it's the best. But is it the best because they're involved in that, or is it the best because Krishna said that's the best? You understand the point? Because if that person is doing something else, then one might consider they might be looking at it from a different angle. Right? The manager is managing, so he thinks he's the best. But after a few years, if he's not managing, someone else is managing, he'll think what he's doing now is the most important. Oh, I was managing before and that, and now you got to spend time for the family and like that. So he'll think that's the best. But when he was a manager, the other people who were spending time with the family, he was saying, we're in Maya. You know? So like that, it's one has to be very, very careful that one is not too subjective. Because the point is whatever you're doing, if it's connected to Krishna, it's the best. You know? So when they asked Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on his Vyas Puja, they had made, I think, 64 items for him. Right? So they asked him which one was the best. And he said, each one is better than the other. Right? Each one's perfect. It's better than the other one. Each preparation. Like that. Because they each have their own unique qualities, and those qualities are connected to Krishna. So each quality is better than the other quality. You know? There's perfection in each.
This is perfect intelligence.
Yeah. Perfect answer, right? So that's the point, is everything is connection with Krishna. And then everything becomes wonderful. So this is how we end up with the central device. We find that the Brahminical culture, meaning the Brahminical mentality, it doesn't mean we all have to live in a grass hut or under a tree and, you know, be poor like Sudama Brahma. It means that that understanding of engaging everything in the Lord's service, like that. So wherever one's situated, if one can do that, that is the best. That's why you see in Bhagavatam, you know, everybody's involved there. You know? They're all stories about all kinds of different people. Chaitanya Charitamrita and all that. All different groups of people. Different positions, everything. But everything's perfect because they're all connecting everything to the Lord. So because of that, everything becomes perfect. Yes?
Just now you're talking about preaching. Is the way that a person preaches connected to their vana and ashram the way that would be appropriate? Or is it just you can do, you know, there's some connection?
There's always connection with one's nature. Yeah. Point is that you're trying to tell others about Krishna. Yeah. So now you can do that, let's say, through drama. You can do it through organizing programs. You can do it through, you know, direct preaching to people, through books, through so many different mediums. It means our whole movement is in preaching mission. So the whole idea is to find your place in that mission so that you can properly take care of yourself how you need to take care of yourself according to your nature and be engaged in the preaching in some way or another. You know? Either directly or supportive, something. Something. Even you sweep in front of the temple very nicely, and then the guests come and go, oh, so nice and clean here. It must be very, you know, elevated people living here. Like Prabhupada made the comment, I think it was at Kumbh Mela, when they were walking, and one sadhu walked by with a very shiny, shiny lota. And Prabhupada commented, he says, you see how shiny the sadhu's lota is. So that's his lota. So you can imagine how clean he is. You know? Like that. So you see the temple room is very nice and clean, then you can understand how the people in this place live. What are their values? You see a lot by these things. So just by doing that, cleaning those nicely, or cleaning the toilets, or, you know, serving prasad nicely, like that. You do that and the people are pleased, then they think these people are very cultured. Because a cultured person is very clean, very respectful, all these things, Krishna says in the Gita. Someone with knowledge has these qualities. So if they see that, then they think, yes. You know, it's also one of the ways of gaining knowledge, inference. You see the place is clean, so you understand people cleaned it. It took organization to do that, and you're only going to organize it if you value it. No one's going to endeavor for something you don't value. So to keep a big place clean means there has to be a bigger organization. That means someone has to value cleanliness. And if they value cleanliness, that means they must be of a higher culture. It must be of an elevated culture, advanced culture. Otherwise, why you will be so worried about cleanliness?
And the same goes with the ashrams as well. You talked about you're describing Varnas roughly in different ways of preaching.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where one situates oneself in Varnas or ashrams. The point is we have a conditioned nature, and it's going to be affected by one of these eight. Well, I mean, a combination of these eight. You know, either more clearly or more mixed. But in any case, it's affected by these things. If it's outside of these things, okay, but it just means that the culture we're coming from is rougher. You know? So the point is it's like when Lord Chaitanya says, Swapacha Guru, then it's not that this chandala remains as one. It's not that he's sitting around, you know, roasting dogs on a spit and then, you know, discussing Bhagavatam while the cooking's going on. One may have come from that background, but now they don't follow that anymore. Sorry. You understand? One has given that up. So the whole point is it's not that one says, well, here it says, you know, Chandala Guru, you know, so I can still remain as a chandala and be advanced. No, but by becoming advanced, it doesn't matter what background one comes from. It doesn't matter what kind of way that you're engaging oneself in Krishna's service. Right? What varna, what ashram. The point is that you have understood Krishna. Therefore, if you understand Krishna, then you start to do things the way Krishna likes. So you see, this person will be very gentle and humble and meek. So a devotee is known by these qualities. So if he comes from a chandala background, then, and he understands the Vedic culture, he will feel, I'm below this. Right? Just like Haridas Thakur or Sanatana Goswami. They, you know, either coming directly from a Muslim background or Muslim association. So they automatically think, I'm not very elevated. My social position is nothing. So they, from the first moment, they can be very humble. Or someone who is from nice Brahmin or nice Kshatriya or like Vaishnava, and then they may be proud of that. And that pride will get in the way of their devotional service. Therefore, the lower stages are not a problem. For us, you know, as we see, is that of all the different titles that we take dasa, which is the shudra title, which means servant, you know, rather than chakrabarti, you know, or something, means, you know, king, you know, or like that. So we take that title, dasa, and that's common throughout, you know, even the other sampradayas, they take that title. It's very, very, very common. So the whole thing is to connect. In other words, we're studying now this deity worship. But from this, we have to see the connection to Krishna and all that. If we just see it as ritual and we're attached to rituals, we'll learn this, but we won't please Krishna. And the rituals have to be done. Someone has to do them, so then that person can do them. But if they actually understand the connection to Krishna, then they start pleasing Krishna. Otherwise, not so much. They don't please so much Krishna. Because how ritual is going to please Krishna? Right? It's the affection that pleases Krishna. So this is one branch of knowledge through which one can see Krishna. And for those who can apply it, either theoretically or practically in their life, you know, either in the home or in the temple, the temple worship or home worship, you know, or just understand the philosophy of it. Right? If Bhagavatam is the conclusion of all Vedic literature, that means all the Vedic literature has its foundation in Bhagavatam. Right? So the foundation of worship is in Bhagavatam. We see the devotees worshipping the Lord. Like that. So that comes to us in these rules here. That connection is there. We just have to try to make it. So the philosophy that is in here will be the same as the Bhagavatam, but it's presented through ritual. So the whole idea is that we understand what is the philosophy here, why this is going on, all these different things. Then it becomes very easy. Okay, is that kind of clear?
I'm trying to just like work out how like the varna, because it's like you're talking about material nature, that we've got to engage in Krishna service, and obviously that will affect the type of preaching that we do, the circle of preaching that we'd be involved in.
May. But it doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying that it matters. I was just saying.
Of course. That's there. Yeah, it means that depending upon. And you know, and even but within that, then there's just like I said, there's the doctor, there's seeing the three, right? Mucus, bile, and air. So you can tell kapha, pitta, and vata constitution. And you can say some basic things about them. So if that's our approach, you can apply just basic principles of Ayurveda, but you can't really run it nicely. You minimum have to understand 3x3. But the real proper is 9x9. Right? So in the same way as you have the natures, the varnas, but just to understand just the basic varna as it is, that's like understanding just the mucus, bile, and air of Ayurveda. You have to be able to understand how they combine. You know? How they interact. And then the fineness within that. You know, you have a king and an artisan. How do they interact? Right? The same time is what if the artisan is older than the king? Right? If he's only a few years, that's one thing. That doesn't matter. You know, within 5-10 years, this way or that way, especially if they're adult. Doesn't matter much. But if it's beyond that, what if you have a 70-year-old artisan and a, you know, 30-year-old king? That's going to be different than if you have, you know, a 50-year-old king and a 20-year-old artisan. Right? The interaction is going to, though you have a king and an artist interacting, there's going to be a difference. Then even within artists, what kind of artist he is. You know? If he's a fine artist or he's a skilled craftsman, or he's an unskilled, you know, laborer, that's also going to make a difference. So there's a lot happening in there. So just to approach, see, that's the difficulty, is that, so it doesn't matter what it is. It's just you find the nature and engage it. The whole point is we should be engaged in Krishna service. If we're bewildered how to engage in Krishna service, what's the best thing, then we're not doing much service. But if we know what we have a nature and we do that with determination, then we're happy. We're fully engaged. The whole point is if you work according to your nature, you're fully engaged. So until you know that nature, then you have to work under someone's direction closely. You know? In other words, somebody tells you what to do and you just do it. And then with time, you'll either gain that experience or others will be able to give you some idea like that. You know, you have your service, you do it. And then you don't worry about these things. You just absorb yourself in that. But one must be introspective to see. Because the point is finding the nature means we're more engaged in Krishna's service. You know, we can't use it as an excuse. Just like we can't use it as an excuse to try to establish ourselves as better than someone else. You know, because, oh, I'm of this varna. I'm Kshatriya, so we're better than so many people. Right? In the same way as we can't use it as an excuse to get out of service for Krishna. Right? To somehow or another go away from Krishna. Because now, oh, I'm a Kshatriya and there's nothing to manage around here, so therefore I'll go off and you know, teach management for Cubby Incorporated, you know, like that or something. You know, it's not, it doesn't work that way. You have to, understanding nature means you understand how to engage in Krishna service. Otherwise, what's the use of understanding? Just like any of these branches of knowledge, understanding them without knowing how to connect it to Krishna, what's the use of it? Right? I study something, if I can't connect it to Krishna, what's the use? It's a waste of time. You know, so if I study some branch of knowledge or some art or some, you know, technique of management or business or, but if I can't connect it to Krishna, then what's the use? So the varna only had varna and ashram natures only have use when they're connected to Krishna. Just to understand them, to understand them, that's material, right? And that way, there's no difference between, you know, the karmakandi, jnanakandi, you know, basically in your, you know, your modern new age, because they just want to understand themselves, understand others, and that's it. There's no, you don't have to connect it to Krishna. Someone new age is not saying, they say find yourself and understand others, but they don't tell you after you do that, understand how to connect that to Krishna. No, you put yourself in the center. Your whole problem, all your anxieties, you're not taking care of your own senses and own needs enough. In other words, you're sacrificing too much for others. So you should give that up and just work for yourself. So you're just becoming a self-centered impersonalist, that's all. You know, at least before they were, at least they put, you know, we're all Brahman, but here it's like, you know, everything's for serving me. You know, others got to understand me, rather than I have to understand others. I only understand others so that they'll understand me better. You know? Like that. So one has to be very, very careful. In all these, something may sound glorious, but unless it's connected to Krishna, it's useless. And as soon as it's connected to Krishna, it's glorious. Let's see. But those things that are coming from Krishna under Krishna's direction are the easiest to engage. Right? At least, you know, specifically culture. Things is another, you know, things you just use them as whatever is practical. And all that, you engage them according to the necessity. But values, culture, you know, lifestyle, that is always best to stick as close to possible to the Vedic. Because that's the most, it's the most sound. It automatically generates these qualities that we're looking for by following it in relationship to Krishna. Yes.
And this looks like to apply others culture to connect to or utilize for Krishna consciousness for to satisfy Krishna is almost like not possible, because this Western, for example, culture is built in base, it is like manifestation another consciousness, another attitude is then looks like it is not possible to apply other culture to satisfy Krishna. You said about the speculation that somebody offering a boga to Krishna and just putting to the mouth of deity. Then looks like, you know, some, just any speculation looks never will satisfy Krishna or fully satisfy him.
Yeah.
Then sooner or later we have to come back to this way how Krishna likes.
Yeah.
Then looks as we can say from the very beginning, it's no way. Maybe you can say from very notified stage, yeah, do whatever you like, just finally offer Krishna, yeah. You know, like this. But finally it's no way, we have to come to this situation,
yeah.
That we're doing as Krishna wants, means Vedic culture.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why it's recommended that you offer prayers based on what the acharyas say. Means you offer their prayers. That means you're studying their prayers. Like that. Then you offer your own prayers, your own heartfelt prayers. But you learn from their prayers. Because they know how to pray. We don't. We learn from them. They, the others, the you know, the acharyas and the other, they know how to cook. We don't. You know, what to cook. They know how to dress, we don't. They know how to speak, we don't. So we just follow all those things that they give us. So like your point is, the point you're making is that ultimately you have to come to that stage. So it's easier to accept that in the beginning.
Even if we can't follow,
yeah.
Like total renunciation, we cannot be like Raghunath.
No.
We can be, but we accept, yes, this is highest.
Mm.
Then we are humble and we're doing whatever we can, but we know our goal. But if you try speculate, say, no, we have to be practical or whatever, utilities principle, you know, and so on, then it's long way.
Very long. Very long. That's a good point. Because the thing is we know, let's say, renunciation is the best. And his example, that's a very first-class example. So then we situate ourselves wherever we are, however close we are to that. We're just beginning, we establish ourselves as brahmacharis, like this. You know, if we find a little bit more along the path, we can go from there to vanaprastha sannyas. If not, we go to grihastha and so we find wherever we are, because it's a progressive stage to get there. And then wherever that is, we start from there and continue. And that's practical. But to just say that that's the end, the goal and the mean, you know, it's just that's it. I mean, grihastha, that's good enough. Then the point is then we're missing the point. Even with grihastha, we're supposed to engage that in Krishna service. We're supposed to be detached from what we have. You know? But then we make the mistake. If we're detached, then we automatically think, then I don't get involved. You know? This is the Western conception. Even just a materialistic conception. You'll even find that in India to some degree. That if you're not attached, why you'll work for it, right? What is it? The proprietorship turns sand into gold, right? So I value it because it's mine. If it's not mine, I couldn't care less. You know, I'm very detached. You know? Like I know one devotee, he always makes a funny comment. After eating a huge feast, then he says, you know, bring any preparation you want. You see, I'm detached. Not, you know, you can take it all away. I have no attachment for it. Like that. So like that, if we don't have anything that we see we can get out of it, and then we're not attached, that's fine. Point is, there's something that we could get out of it, we're not attached. But we still can engage that in Krishna's service. Like we see, Prabhupada is not attached, or the Goswami is not attached to money. But if someone wants to engage it in Krishna's service, they'll take it.
They were very attached to engage those passions.
Yeah, whatever it is. So the point is we must engage everyone according to their nature. We must engage everyone according to our nature. Like Prabhupada said, Mayapur is for sitting down and chanting Hare Krishna. But since we can't sit down and chant Hare Krishna, therefore he engages us in building big temples and buildings and cities and doing all kinds of things because our nature is engaged. And if you engage your nature in Krishna's service, that's the perfection. You know, if we just sit down and our mind will get disturbed. It won't work. We had a Babaji here once. He said, Prabhupada is the only Babaji Prabhupada had initiated. Because he had been diagnosed with some far out disease that he had 1 year to live, that was it. And so then Prabhupada, I think, had offered to give him a bus or something, he could go out and preach. Like that, but he wasn't physically well enough. So then Prabhupada said, okay, you sit down in Mayapur here and you chant a lack of names and do a little service. And there was a grass hut out around this area. It would have been in, where was that hut? It kind of would have been kind of like where our round house is, the small round house. There were two little huts there, so he went out and lived in one of them. He used to chant his rounds and come in and do something here at the temple and all that. And this went on for some months and all that. And he's doing nicely, and then he went for a checkup with the doctor. And so then somehow or another, miraculously, then the disease had either whatever it was had stopped and he wasn't going to die in now 9 months. But, you know, they said he's going to live, you know, he's not going to die. You know, at least not immediately. Immediately he went back to whatever his country was and bought himself a big car and, you know, sunglasses and went out on the beach and caught himself a few ladies and just got into the whole thing enjoying himself because he's not going to die. Like that. And, you know, finished. So much for being a Babaji. Right? So that's the point, is that we have to engage our nature. So if we have a passionate nature, we have to engage it. And you engage that in Krishna's service, that's perfection. But as we become purified, then we might find that maybe different aspects, you know, we can sit down and do some reading and actually be, you know, remember Krishna, you know, or, you know, we can do different things and be able to remember, you know. Like that, speak to somebody nicely, or, you know, do something. So as these things come, as we become purified. So the culture, then, at that point, as we become more purified, we will find that it's natural to want to relate with a more refined culture. Like you see devotees now, so much talk about proper, nice dealings between devotees. But you end up with, you basically have two alternatives. Well, three alternatives. You can use the old world, you know, Western culture, which I doubt hardly anybody nowadays is even, you know, how you say.
Satisfied?
No, has not even a...
Capable?
No, not capable. Yeah, capable is one thing, but experienced. Mm-hmm. There's very few who have experienced old world Western culture, you know, like that. Then, or you have the new age now, right? Or you have the Vedic. Because all of these deal with proper relationships between people. They're trying to establish. You know? Old world is, you know, you have some kind of religious, proper religious sentiment and morality. You know, you're a good Christian or a good Catholic or good something. You know? And, you know, you're trying to be nice and there's all those kind of values and that because it's based on religion. You know, some non-Vedic religious process. Or the New Age is just built on speculation, right? And the Vedic, it's based on Varnashram. I mean, those are the only three categories of Manamoy, right? The emotional platform. Vedic religious process, non-Vedic religious process, mental speculation.
But now, one thing, very often it was such argument that Varnashrama is now not possible.
So either is Western culture. Western culture has never been possible. Vedic at least was possible. But Western has never been possible.
Only Western.
Yeah, I mean we only hear of it, right? You know, Romeo and Juliet and, you know, and King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table and they rode off into the sunset and they lived happily ever after, but has anybody ever seen it? It's never happened. You know? Vedic, in Western culture doesn't work. The marriages don't work, the educational systems don't work, relationships, discipline, law and order. I mean, there's places in big cities, at least especially in America, where the police don't even bother going. They don't even go inside there. They can do whatever they want inside there, kill each other, this, that. They just, police stay around it to make sure they don't come out. You know, it's like do what you want inside. It's like a, you know, inner city jungle. You know, as long as the animals stay in the jungle and kill each other there, they don't bother. No one bothers. Only if they start bothering people they shouldn't, then they come in and do something. But otherwise, they just stay, it's just... You can't take care of it. You know? Point is whatever you value, you can do. I mean, we may say it's not possible. There's still people living like Amish and Amish who are living a lifestyle of 100 years ago. No electricity, no machineries like that other than a plow. They move around on horses. They still wear the outfits that they wore 100 years ago or so when they came from Germany or wherever it was and set up camp. You know? Like that. So, I mean, it's you know, someone may say, well, they're very isolated. But what group of people is not isolated? You know, you go down to the university and go into the, you know, nuclear physics department, and you see, who do those people hang out with? They hang out with other nuclear physicists, you know, or somebody along that line. They don't hang out with other people. They don't mix with common people, you know, like that. You take, you know, whatever group of people you have, they only mix with that group of people. They may walk on the street, but we walk on the street. You know, they say, well, I mean, we look different. I mean, you go on the street, you know, in the West, I mean, people look pretty different there, you know. All kinds of strange hairstyles and all that. So, I mean, it's everybody has their own way they look. But it's a matter of values. You know, whatever your values are. And so that means sacrifice. If there's no sacrifice, there is no refinement, no development.
But this statement, what I said, means that somebody simply rejecting his mood, we can say, or attitude, is that he rejecting just to elevate himself, or he just is satisfied, or he don't want to give up. Because this, I think, is particular.
It means they're attached to the Western culture, that's what it means. But they're attached to their particular kind of Western culture.
Yeah,
just like you say, okay, you're an American, and you say it's not possible to follow Varnashram. So at least why don't you refine yourself a little bit and at least live, let's say, you know, British culture? You know? Or better than that, why don't you want to live Western culture, why don't you live continental European culture? It's more refined than that than American culture.
You know, there, you don't
oh yeah, I mean, they're much more careful when they deal in this
protected,
and that.
You know,
it's a lot more. I mean, you go to the East Bloc, there's still ladies that go outside, they wear black, and they wear their, you know, babushkas on their head and all that kind of stuff. That's in the East Europe. We're talking in West Europe. They deal much different. Like that, they think Americans are the strangest, you know, cultural thing that ever happened, you know. Mm-hmm. When they come over there, they think they're so gross. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to tell an American. And they dress different, and they're so loud, you're in the airport, like hundreds of people in the airport. Where was I sitting? Luxembourg Airport, right? I was sitting in the Luxembourg airport. So Luxembourg basically is a country of rich people. It's a little dinky thing, you know, you drive across in about half an hour or something like that. But it's all full of just rich people, like that. So I'm sitting in the airport there, and flights are coming in from everywhere there. You know, people are speaking all different languages and this and that. And basically the whole place is quiet. And then at one point, a couple of Americans walk through. It's like they take over the place, you know, talking like real loud and all this kind of stuff and like this and getting that. And they got, you know, 5 million cameras and bags and weird colored cloth and all kinds of funny things that they're wearing and walking around. And it's just, you know, it's just so American, you know. I had been in the airport. I was sitting there because I think the devotees, they didn't know when I was coming, you know. Fortunately, there was someone coming about, I think, 3 hours or after my arrival, and they knew he was coming, so if they didn't pick me up, then I'd wait for when they arrived. So sure enough, they came there. So I sat there for 3 hours, just watching all the different kinds of people and how they dealt, and when they lost their luggage, they go to the lost luggage thing and how they would deal there. You know, others come over, deal very nicely, quietly, and then the Americans come along and rip the place to shreds, you know. Like that. So then one could say, well, it's not practical, but there's millions of people that are following these cultures, right? There's millions of people following the English culture or the, you know, French or the German or like this and that. So it comes down to, it's not that the Vedic culture can't be followed today. We don't want to follow it because we don't want to change the culture that we ourselves grew up in. And we even say Western, but we mean how my parents taught me in my house. And the particular company that I chose, my friends, you know, and which restaurants that I used to go to and places to hang out. That is my world, and it's not practical for me to change that. But then someone should be honest and say just that. They should not give broad generalizations as if the particular culture that they grew up in, you know, wherever it happened to be, in Pennsylvania or Louisiana or something, is the culture for the whole planet. You know? Because, I mean, there is, bless his souls, but there is only 300 million Americans. And of those, a good amount of those are not what you call your, you know, standard, you know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, you know. I mean, there's parts of America where everybody in the streets, in the schools, in the homes, and in the shops, they all speak Spanish, you know. I mean, if you're white in Los Angeles, you can, in your school, you can register yourself to make a minorities club. Because there's less white boys in the school than there are, you know, blacks and Hispanics and Chinese and, you know, all these other kinds of people, all third world people. You know, you go to Washington, D.C., the capital of America, is 90% black. You know? And they have their own culture, their own language. So the whole thing is, then the devotee should just say, you know, it's not possible for me to follow any other culture than white America culture. You know? Like that. They shouldn't give broad philosophical generalizations. They're not possible in this age. Because there's, as it is, probably hundreds of thousands of different cultures going on right now on the planet. It's not that there's one homogenous, you know, well-oiled, well-engineered culture that's really happening and all the relationships are going on and people are really satisfied and happy. Like that. It's not. The point is we have to enter into this Vedic culture to the point where we understand how to make it work, that we get results. Because the Vedic culture is based on the principles of devotional service. Right? So this devotional service, then the Vaidhi, all these rules and regulations, is based on the principles of the advanced devotional service, is based on the spiritual realm. So when we see that connection, then we see it works very nicely. Like one may say, well, it's not practical for me to wear a dhoti when I go to work. But the principle is not you wear a dhoti. The principle is you dress like a gentleman. Right? You dress like a proper gentleman. So in India, then the proper gentleman wears a dhoti. Why? Because in the spiritual realm, the proper gentleman wears a dhoti. Right? You don't see Krishna wearing blue jeans. You know, you won't see Radharani out in a tight leather miniskirt. You know, it's just, you won't see it. But, so the whole point is, okay, you can't wear your dhoti out to your job, but you can still dress like a proper American gentleman. That is the principle. Is that a devotee is cultured, he's gentle, therefore his dress is gentle. So you'll wear what is considered gentle. You understand that point? So the principle is maintained. I mean, Satsarup used to put on a suit and go to work. And Prabhupada was impressed. Here's somebody who's not just a bum off the street like all the other Wallas in 26 Second Avenue. This guy actually has a job, you know. He's respectable and he knows English. He can actually get things done. You know? He was a gentleman. So the principle is that human life, you have to act like a gentleman. So if in that situation, you were, that's fine. You know? But when you're at your house, is there anyone stopping you from wearing a dhoti? No. There we like to wear our blue jeans or like that because we feel more comfortable in that. We're conditioned to that. That is comfortable. You know, a pair of pants we've been wearing for the last week is more comfortable than a dhoti that you change once or twice a day. You know? So, like that, we have to be very, very careful in seeing. But, as you made the point before, is that in the beginning it doesn't really matter. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. As long as you engage in Krishna service, you see it in connection to Krishna. So if one can do that, then we don't care. We don't really worry what you dress like, what you do this and that. But you shouldn't be proud of that and expect the whole rest of the world's got to follow it and just say Varnashram is not practical when there's hundreds of millions of Indians who are following it. You know? You should be very careful. Otherwise, I've seen devotees who follow Western kind of values, when they bump into devotees in India who follow the proper, you know, cultured values that are, you know, mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita and other things like that, they actually get on the case. This is not proper. This is fanatic. You don't want to follow them yourself, fine, but that's for you. And if someone else wants to follow, give them a break. Right? Otherwise, what culture is that? Right? It's not old world. It may be old world, but then instead of harassing you, you probably hang them or burn them at the stake. Then, if it's new age, you know, it's modern, you wouldn't do that at all. You'd understand the other person. You know, that's all right for him. You know, it's like, that's the way he sees the world, as a bona fide role model. You can follow that. We respect that. You know, I may have a different idea. I follow that. And if it's Vedic, then
this is what we do.
Yeah, you wouldn't be bothering the other person. Not over lifestyle. Maybe over philosophy. That's the thing. In India, everybody was following the same culture. Overall culture, though they would fight like cats and dogs over philosophy. You know, it's the Mayavadis and the Vaishnavs. They would be fighting over philosophy, but when they sat down to eat, they'd both eat with the right hand, sit on the floor, and wash your hands after eating, and wash your mouth and feet, and do these things. So that culture is common. So this deity worship then just establishes for us the, an insight into the culture of the spiritual realm. It's coded, it's given in codes of rules and regulations so we can understand it. You know? So that we apply it correctly at the right time, the right place, the right thing. So a code is given. But ultimately you have to understand that to make it living, to make it alive. Like that. Then it works. And it works very nicely. Otherwise, not so. Otherwise it's boring. You follow the rules and regulations, but you don't understand the purposes why you're doing it, doesn't become alive. So that's the Niyamagraha. Okay. So seeing that it appears to be getting late, should stop here. Chaiho. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare